Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Which verse?
Evam pravittasya sadā bhūtānām śrēyasī dvijāha sarvātmakenāpi yadā natushyad vidayam tataha evam pravittasya sadā bhūtānām śrēyasī dvijāha sarvātmakenāpi yadā natushyad hṛdayam tataha. Evam thus pravittasya, one who is engaged in sadā, always, bhūtānām, of the living beings, śrēyasī, in the ultimate good, dvijāha, O twice born, sarvātmakīnā api, by all means, yadā, when, na, not, atushyat, become satisfied, hṛdayam, mind, tataha, at that time. Translation and purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. O twice born Brahmana, still his mind was not satisfied, although he engaged himself in working for the total welfare of all people. Purport, Sri Vyasadeva was not satisfied with himself, although he had prepared literatures of Vedic value for the all-around welfare of the general mass of people. It was expected that he would be satisfied by all such activities, but ultimately he was not satisfied. This is being spoken to the assembled sages by Suta Goswami. These sages had assembled for the benefit of the general population, of everybody, in this unfortunate age. What is it? Naimishe nimishakshe tre. Rishayak shonakadayaha satram svargaya lokaya sahasrasatam asata. They sat down to perform an elaborate soma sacrifice, 1,000-year sacrifice. But svargaya lokaya should not be misinterpreted. Not that they wanted to go to heaven, to go to svarga loka. Svarga is explained by our acharyas as Vaikuntha. Actually, it's the name of the Supreme Lord. So they did it for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, not to get entrance into a heavenly planet. And lokaya is understood for the benefit of the whole world. Not selfish purpose. One who acts selfishly is not a real Brahmana. No matter what he knows, no matter how he dresses, and no matter what other people think about him, he's not a proper Brahmin if he's selfish, if his motives and his activities are selfish. Wanting to go to heaven, wanting a comfortable position, wanting money in the bank, a nice house, a nice wife, and a good reputation, and a comfortable, stable position in life is selfish. For us, of course, it's relative. What is expected of each person is different. But what is expected of a follower of Srila Prabhupada is dedication to the preaching mission. That's our selflessness. Not measured so much by the extremity of our austerities, but according to our dedication to the preaching work. That's our selflessness measure in our context. Anyway, going back to the ancient context of Naimisharanya, and before that, of Vyasadeva and his ashram. The sages are selflessly gathered together to perform a ritual sacrifice not for any selfish sankalpa, but to benefit the world, who are about to enter Kali Yuga and suffer greatly. Sages care about what happens to everybody. And they have some good ideas about what will actually free people from that suffering. Not building hospitals or doing other mundane welfare work or political work or social work. Their idea of benefit for human society is something actually beneficial. Certainly, the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is what will benefit the people of Kali Yuga the most. The sages, when they first assembled, didn't have that particularly in mind. They were listening to all sorts of Puranas and Mahabharata. But after hearing everything else, their intelligence had been purified to the point they recognized that the most important thing, the most effective thing to benefit everybody will be the dissemination of Srimad Bhagavatam. Not the performance of some ritual sacrifice, but the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then to them, Sutta is describing the selfless endeavors of Vyasadeva. He's the greatest of all these sages. The sages are being talked to, they're hearing the narration. But the greatest of all of them, Mahamuni, is Srila Vyasadeva. It's said in the Vishnu Purana, I don't remember the exact Sanskrit words, Anye Vyavaharantyeva. Other sages, they subsist on the garbage that Vyasadeva throws out of his cottage. That means his spare ideas, his less important ideas are the ones picked up by the other sages, and that's how they make their living. Off the intelligence of Vyasadeva. He's the greatest of all these sages, and he's the most selflessly dedicated to the welfare of everybody. He's the best of all brahmanas, therefore. Sada pravittasya, always, not just Monday through Friday, but always engaged selflessly. No time out for himself. No ulterior motives. He's not taking 10-15% off the top. He's giving everything for the benefit of others. And that's his happiness. He doesn't care for sense gratification. Have you seen the ashram of Vyasadeva above Badrinath? It's not a place where you're going to find much sense gratification. Among the icy glaciers in a cave, no shopping centers, no Baskin-Robbins, nothing of sense gratification. Vyasadeva didn't have access to it, and he didn't want it. He didn't care for sense gratification. He cared of making everybody happy. Bhutan amshrayasi. So why shouldn't he feel satisfied with himself? He's the most selfless person on the planet. And he's done. It's not that he's a young man thinking about what he could do in the future. And he hasn't done it yet, and is not sure whether he will be able to do it. Just nice ideas, good intentions. No, he's carried them all out. He's done it all. He's in his maturity. He's accomplished his goals. He's actually done very substantial work for the benefit of the human race. He could retire now in comfort, in a sage's kind of comfort. I don't mean sense gratification. I mean go back to his ashram and comfortably meditate and live a nice sattvic life. He could retire, but he's feeling incomplete. Dissatisfied. Not dissatisfied that what anything he did was wrong, but it's not complete. His work isn't finished. And a person who is really dedicated to accomplishing something will not be satisfied until it's finished. He won't be satisfied with his work 75 or 65% finished. And he's not sure why he's feeling dissatisfied. I wrote the Vedanta Sutra to explain what might be confusing in the Vedas. And for people who can't understand such elevated philosophy, I also wrote the Mahabharata. So what's the problem? Why am I feeling like this, dissatisfied? And then he understands, well, I guess I have not adequately described the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He gets the idea. Narada is going to tell him this, the same, practically the same exact words in the next chapter. He's already on his own discovered what his guru is going to tell him. But he needs to hear it from the guru. It's a very intelligent disciple who knows what the guru is going to tell him before he says it. That means there is such a proper relationship between guru and disciple that even without saying anything, the disciple knows what the instruction is going to be. But still, he should hear it from the guru for confirmation, for verification. And that will happen. Vyasadeva will give the explicit instruction. You have not. Kimva Bhagavata Dharma. This is how Vyasadeva thought to himself. Kimva Bhagavata Dharma Naprayena Nirupita. For the most part, I haven't described Bhagavata Dharma. Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. So many dharmas, so many duties or responsibilities, ways to fulfill the responsibilities of human life. A human being should not live just like a polished animal. The dogs run on four legs and we run on four wheels. But if we just eat, sleep, mate, and defend in sophisticated ways, and we have no interest in perfecting our lives, and we don't understand the eternal principles of human responsibility of life, dharma. Dharmena hina pashubhir samana. This is from Bhagavatam, isn't it? Okay, Hitopadesha Mahabharata, and I think Bhagavatam. Dharmena hina pashubhir samana. People, human beings, who don't have a proper concept of dharma, they may have some religion, but it's just some superstitious or materialistic religion, vague idea. But they don't have any proper understanding of the responsibility of human life, our real spiritual life, no idea. Pashubhir samana, they're equal to animals. A human being is an animal if he doesn't have any dharma. Or Madhvacharya in the Vishnu Tattva Vinirnaya says, yasya na dharma dharmo na sasamayi. Someone who doesn't have a proper concept of what is duty and what is to be avoided, adharma. What is irreligion? What is religion and what is irreligion? One who has no proper understanding of this, na sa samayi, Samayi doesn't mean here somebody who has time. Samayi, this is the other in, somebody who's engaged in something. And samaya there means debate, philosophical debate. He is not a fit person to engage, to participate in philosophical debate. Just like the university scholars will not deal with people who aren't academically trained, who don't have at least a master's degree. They won't listen to them, to naive, untrained people. They don't let them join in the discussion. Similarly, Madhvacharya says that the actual scholars of the Vedic philosophies, different philosophies, different schools, but whatever your school is, you're not worth talking to if you don't have any conception of what is dharma and adharma. If you're just amoral and ignorant of the real responsibility of human life, you should not be allowed to join the discussion of spiritual matters. Vyasadeva and even the other sages who are hearing this at Naimisharanya, they're not on that low level. They are very selfless workers for the benefit of mankind, and not just in some mundane way. They're not just mundane welfare workers. They're promoting the Vedic knowledge and the performance of sacrifices for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. These are really beneficial for human beings. But it's not complete. Yenatma supersedati. The highest dharma, the highest responsibility of human life, is fulfilled when a person can become fully satisfied, not just partially satisfied. A person who's diseased will feel better when his disease is cured. But that's just the negating of the contamination. Where is the positive life? Okay, Mr. Jones, you're cured. You've been in the hospital for 3 years. You lost your job. Your wife and children left you. But you're free now. You know, now you're cured. You can go back to your life. And Mr. Jones will just cry. I don't have any life anymore. What am I supposed to do? I might as well just stay in the hospital. Where's our positive life? Performing acts of purification, pious works, will add to our credits. But what will you do with your credits? Just like somebody who lived in the Soviet Union with money in his pocket, there was nothing to buy with the money. Yeah. What's the use of having the credits if you can't do anything with them? What's the use of being purified of your contamination if you don't have a real life to carry on after you're zeroing out of your contamination? Where's your real life? So that's why Vyasadeva is dissatisfied. Okay, I've taught the living entities how to become purified of their individual various kinds of conditioned contamination. But I haven't taught them what their real life is. Jivir Swarupoi Krishner Nitya Dash. Of course, Vyasadeva wasn't speaking Bengali, but the idea is there. The eternal identity, the essential identity of the living entity is that he's eternally Krishna's a servant. And if there's no recognition of that, or not insufficient recognition of that, of course, in the Vedic sacrifice, there's some recognition that it's all being done for Vishnu. But Vishnu's somewhere up in the clouds. His name is not even mentioned in the mantras, most of the mantras. He's just Yajnavalkya Vishnu. Vishnu's somewhere behind the scenes. Some vague, unknown way, he's the recipient of the sacrifice. And if you've read Bhagavad Gita, you know, Bhoktadam Yagatapasam. But how does that actually work? We're offering sacrifices to demigods. How does it go to Vishnu? Well, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it goes to him. And the Shataputta Brahmana says that he's the actual recipient of sacrificial benefits. But we don't understand how. We don't understand the real basis of spiritual life, a relationship with God in which everything we do, everything we intend, everything we desire is simply for Krishna's pleasure. That is such an elevated concept. It's way beyond Bhoktaram Yagatapasam. Yes, Krishna is the recipient of everybody's ritual performances. Everyone's working for Krishna. But the concept of being Krishna's employee is not the same as the concept of being Krishna's loving devotee, loving servant. There's a paid servant and there's a loving servant. They're not the same, not of the same quality. The person who's just working for money has no loving relationship and probably hates his boss. He only deals with this person and submits to him to get the money. Otherwise, why is he asking for money? If you really love your employer, why ask for money? Work for free. But who's doing that? Besides the fact that we need money, even if we didn't need it, we don't love our employers. Therefore, we're not going to work for them for free. So if you're working for Krishna just to get something for yourself, then that's not pure devotion. There's some kind of devotion there. But if you're selfless, if you're selfish to some extent, then you're not a pure devotee to that extent. You're some kind of devotee, but not a pure devotee. If you remain selfish, if you're working for yourself to get something from Krishna. When we don't care what Krishna gives us, that is such a mature condition. That is actual pure devotion. We only care that he becomes happy. And whether I suffer like anything in my trying to serve Krishna, I'll accept that. Ultimately, there is the stage of Mahabhava, Ashlishyava Padaratam Pinashtumam. This is even beyond what Vyasadeva is thinking. But it is there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed it. Ashlishyava Padaratam Pinashtumam Adarshanan Marmahatam Purotuva Yata Tatava Vidadatu Lampato Matrananadas to se eva na paraha. It would be hypocritical for us to make this our meditation, most of us, because we're not on that level of complete surrender, but we can look at it as an ideal. Maybe we can chant the verse. I wouldn't chant it day and night because we're just not on that level. Krishna would not really be convinced hearing it from our mouths. This is Srimati Radharani speaking. When she says it, then it's for real. We say it, we're just saying the words. Well, we have some sentiment. We have some feeling, but not the full level of commitment and surrender. That's very rare among what is being of conditioned souls, even among jivas. It is very rare that a jiva can attain to Mahabhava. It can happen by the association of the eternal associates of the Lord who have that most elevated attitude, you can also develop it. You can. But not easily and not quickly. Ashlishyava pararatam panashtumam. Krishna is independent. I'm not conditional in my surrender to him. I'm not going to love him if he treats me right. Let him treat me right or treat me wrong. Embrace me or stamp on me with his feet. We may be experiencing a lot of stamping in our lives. So many difficulties. We can blame it on Krishna. But the highest attitude is to accept it. Krishna is my friend. Maybe we can phrase it like this and it's more appropriate for us. Krishna is my friend. He's not going to make me suffer unnecessarily. He's completely aware of everything in my life. He's completely in control of everything. And he's letting whatever happen. If that's true, this is logic. Krishna is completely in control. He's completely cognizant of everything. That's stated in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Janmadyasya yato anvayad itaratas charteshu abhigaksurat. Well, are we actually convinced? That's the very first verse of the Bhagavatam. Are we convinced even through the first line? If we're not, then we have a lot of convincing to be done. We're not even convinced of what's said in the first line. Krishna knows everything, and he's independently powerful to do anything he wants. He's capable of doing anything, and he knows everything. So take those two premises. This is Aristotelian logic. Krishna is omniscient, and he's omnipotent. Therefore, he can take care of me. He can take care of everything, and I'm also something. So why, if he knows everything, why doesn't he know me? I'm something. And if he can do anything, then why can't he take care of my needs? That's something. It's not outside the scope of everything. Krishna knows everything and can do everything, so he can also perfectly take care of my needs and desires. I guess the one missing question is, does he want to? But we know, okay, we have to add, maybe the syllogism is not complete with that without proving that. Bhoktaram yogatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam. There's the evidence. Krishna says, I'm everybody's well-wishing friend. Not that I have my friends. The Brijbasis are my friends. Everybody else I don't know. No, he says, I'm the well-wishing friend of everybody. Sarvabhutanam, all living beings. I am favorably disposed. I'm desiring that everybody be successful and happy. So there is the missing piece of the logic. Krishna can do everything, he knows everything, and he wishes well for everyone. Therefore, why should I doubt if I'm at all capable of putting the two, one, two, and three together of the logic? Unless I'm completely irrational and illogical, why can't I understand and be convinced that Krishna will take care of me? If I trust him, then he'll take care of me. This is the most important of the six elements of Sharanagati, or taking shelter, approaching Krishna for shelter. The most important element is Goptritve Varanam. Accepting the position that I am the dependent, maintained servant. And that Krishna, Gopta, is protector, maintainer. Gopa, Goptri mean the same thing. Of course, there go means cow. Oh, no, it's not the same thing. I guess it comes out the same idea, but grammatically it's not the same. There's Gopa, cow, protector. And there's Gup, one word, Gup. That's not Gopa, that's a different word. You can? Go and pa? So a gop tree can be a cow protector? Okay, anyway, it's equivalent, even if it's not derivationally exactly the same. Maybe coming from two different places, but it comes out meaning the same thing. Krishna is the maintainer and protector. And I should be convinced, if he's the maintainer and protector of the universe, why am I left out? He maintains and protects everybody and everything, but not me. That makes no sense. That's irrational. Why can't we be convinced that Krishna will maintain and protect us? Because if we don't act as his devotees, if we don't think like his devotees, okay, maybe he won't protect us so nicely if we're not surrendered. But if we are surrendered, then why shouldn't he protect us? Or I'm not surrendered now, why don't I become surrendered? Because then he'll protect me. He's capable, he's all-knowing, and he's favorably disposed. He's interested, he's sympathetic. Prabhupada, in a lecture I was listening to, said if you had, even in the material world, a friend who came and told you, look, trust me, depend on me, I'll take care of all your business and all your other affairs. You just trust me. Such a friend. Wouldn't you be happy to have such a friend? Of course, maybe he's not capable, or maybe he's not honest. But still, it's a nice intention, at least. And Krishna is God. Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't lie like that. He can do it because he's omniscient and omnipotent. And he wants to do it because he cares for us. We should trust him. We should trust that he will maintain us and take care of us. All our problems, he'll take care of them as long as we trust him. The problem is lack of trust. We don't trust Krishna enough, and we don't show him that he can trust us enough. But solve that, and everything is taken care of. That's what Vyasadeva wants to teach. That's what Vyasadeva is already realizing he's not sufficiently taught. Why does he have to teach the glories of Vasudeva? That Vyasadeva is envious or jealous? A jealous god, and if you don't flatter him, he'll get angry and throw lightning bolts? That's not the reason why. It's that people cannot become fully satisfied. Yenatma supersedeti. Unless they become surrendered devotees. Surrendered, prapanna. But prapanna means surrender not in the sense of a criminal being, accosted by the police. I surrender. A prisoner of war. No, it's really the prapad means to take, to approach someone to take shelter. Prapad means you come to somebody and you acknowledge that I need your support, and I trust that you can give it to me. Please maintain me. That is surrendering. When Prabhupada uses the word surrender, that's what he means. Not that, okay, damn it, I surrender. Not that attitude. But the voluntary surrender. That's what Vyasadeva is at least intuitively feeling he hasn't promoted adequately. His guru will verify that and then add the essential missing element of, well, what do I do to accomplish that? The answer is, you present Srimad Bhagavatam. Savaipum samparo dharmo yato bhoktuirit hoksaje ahoituki apratiyata yayatma supersedati. This is what will make people fully satisfied. Fully satisfied. Prabhupada says it, you can hear that he knows what it means. Fully satisfied. Whatever you can do to awaken your love for Krishna, your devotion to the Supreme Lord, which is unmotivated and uninterrupted, that's the highest responsibility of human life. And Srimad Bhagavatam teaches how to find and execute that. Therefore, the promotion of Srimad Bhagavatam is the solution of everybody's problems. And therefore, we should give our whole lives selflessly to the deep study and promotion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, Hare Krishna. I'm sorry, I meant to stop 10 minutes ago, but was there one or two questions? Yes, sir.
So what does that mean, that we will accept which is favorable for devotion? Means the atmosphere is not anukul for devotional service.
Anukul, not what is anukul for my sense gratification, or for my mental, what my mind thinks is favorable, what my senses think is favorable, but what is actually favorable to my devotional advancement. My mind and my senses can't reliably tell me that. What is actually anukula? My guru and Krishna, the Supersoul, can tell me. I have to be listening and be ready to hear from the guru and from Supersoul what is actually favorable for my spiritual progress and what is unfavorable. Because my mind and my senses will tell me exactly the wrong idea of what's favorable. So that's what it is. Whatever the guru and whatever Krishna tell you, you should do and not do, that's anukulya and pratikulya.
But how one will understand this? Krishna is inspiring sometimes.
I should open my ears and listen. They're talking, Guru's talking, Krishna's talking in the Gita and elsewhere. I should listen. Even if I just read Bhagavad Gita, even if I don't have a guru. I live on the far side of the moon, but somehow I got a copy of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. No devotees anywhere around. No one to consult. But I have this book that I got somehow. Now someone dropped it on the far side of the moon and I picked it up. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita as it is what's anukulya and what's pratikulya. And if you can find a guru who's representing Krishna honestly, that he can give you more details that suit that are appropriate to your individual situation. Listen, Gita is there. And we've distributed so many hundreds of millions of Gitas, 100 million at least, around the world. Everybody should be able to find one in a language they can read. Read that book and find the devotees who are living that book and get further instructions from them. That's how we find out. How do you find out what the prasadam tastes like? Put it in your mouth. So how do you find out what Krishna wants? Well, listen to him and listen to his representatives. Okay. Anything else? Okay.
Actually, throughout the years, I've been hearing some devotees, sometimes even proper disciples, senior devotees, they say that there was a time when I used to think like this, that we should just selflessly dedicate our lives to helping everyone and becoming fully Krishna conscious. But then I became mature and I realized that that's for a later phase in life, and now we should gradually build up and, you know, there's all these kind of ideas.
Yeah, but where did they get this idea from? Not from Prabhupada. Yeah, I never heard Prabhupada.
But for
like that,
they say Prabhupada began the movement. It was an emergency mode, and therefore he was pushing. You know, it's like the
Prabhupada presents these as eternal teachings. Bhagavad Gita, what Prabhupada says in his purports was only for the first 15 years of ISKCON, and then it became obsolete. And then ISKCON, after that, is meant to become pious Hinduism. Mixed devotional service. Everyone can revert back to their selfishness. That was never Prabhupada's intention. It may be happening, but it shouldn't be happening. Because Prabhupada didn't intend that. He didn't advise or promote that at all. Of course, people cannot always fully surrender immediately. Or they may even fall back on their old ways. But that's not desirable. It happens, but it's not desirable. And it really shouldn't be, in some tricky way, philosophically justified. It's not. Not according to our philosophy. It's unfortunate. It happens, but it's unfortunate. And don't pretend that it's fortunate. Okay. So let's stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.